Today on Young Money Radio. Is it possible to turn $12,000 into $2 million as an online stock trader? We'll talk to the man who did it while attending college and before his 26th birthday. Could you do the same thing? Timothy Sykes gives us the inside scoop on what it takes to make $1 million as a day trader. Plus, credit reports. It seems like we're hearing about them everywhere these days. But do you really need to worry about your credit score while you're in school? It's reported that as many as 70% of employers are now using credit reports as part of their hiring process. Mark Price from BrightScore.com will join us to talk about how to make your credit score the best it can be. We're glad you're here. It's your life right now on Young Money Radio. We're so glad to have you along with us on this edition of Young Money Radio. This portion of our show is brought to you by One Simple Loan. If you graduated with a ton of student loans, visit onesimpleloan.com/YM Radio for 10 money-saving reasons to consolidate them with One Simple Loan, giving you one monthly payment and one low interest rate. Any amount of savings that you can create for your future is money well saved. We're so glad you're with us on this edition. We're going to talk about making some money. How about $12,000 into $2 million? Timothy Sykes turned a $12,000 gift into nearly $2 million trading. Now, you might say, well, what's the big deal about that? It's awesome in and of itself, but consider the fact that he did this while he was a college student. So, Timothy Sykes, we're thrilled to welcome you to Young Money Radio. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, it's an incredible story, Timothy, and I've read a lot about you, and you know, there's a lot out there. And by the way, Timothy has a new book that's coming out, right? It's not out yet, or is it out? An American Hedge Fund.
No, it's not out. It's debuting October 1st.
Coming out October 1st, and you also have been the star of a television documentary, Wall Street Warriors.
Yes.
You've been all over CNBC and many other television programs, cable TV, talking to you. You give us some perspective on this, Tim. You took the original amount of money, which was a bar mitzvah gift. Is that correct?
It was. I got it when I was 13, obviously my bar mitzvah, but it was just sitting in saving accounts for a few years. And then 1999, my senior year of high school, stock market was going crazy, and I was tired of just earning just interest. So my parents gave me my money to play with. They thought I would lose everything. They thought it would be a good lesson for me. And instead, I turned it into basically $2 million over the next 3 years throughout college. So it was kind of an interesting journey.
It's incredible. Where did your interest in the stock market come from? You're in high school. Had you always been interested in investing and making money, or was it something that one day you just became aware of and you decided, hey, I've got this money. Maybe I can go do this?
I was really a tennis player. You know, I played with James Blake in high school, and I was really focused on my tennis career all throughout high school. And then I had an injury, so I needed surgery on my elbow. So I was really kind of incapacitated. So I couldn't go outside. I couldn't do anything. You know, this was 99, 2000. Stock market was going crazy. So I was like, all right, let me try this online trading. So it was kind of, my dad calls it the $1 million injury, because, you know, it kind of all led into that. So, I mean, I never really knew. I read a little bit about Wall Street. You know, I had a few stocks. I had, like, Supercuts and Boston Celtics before, but I never really knew about online stock trading. You know, at that time, there really wasn't anything. There still isn't that much out there.
What's really was the beginning of the kind of the online day trader kind of, you know, craze. It began that way, and a lot of people, I guess, tried it, Tim. But, you know, a lot of people found that they didn't have the time to put into it. They didn't have the inclination to learn how to do it properly. How did you learn to do it? Was it just trial and error, or did you read a lot before you started? What was your process like in the early days?
Well, I mean, in the early days, I was lucky enough to get started in the greatest bull market in the world. So I kind of got lucky. But then as my accounts grew in size, I kept wanting to protect myself. You know, a lot of people who got into trading, they made a lot of money, then they lost it because they used leverage. You know, they get too cocky. So I was really, it was kind of nice. I had a whole learning curve, and I just kept reading and just finding out more about myself, finding out different investment strategies. You know, I discovered short selling, where you can actually make money when stock prices head lower. And I discovered that in 2001, 2002. So the timing was really perfect. You know, I'm pretty lucky, but again, it's all about just learning and wanting to learn, because you really just need to experience all kinds of strategies and find out the experiences of others so that you can kind of learn from their mistakes.
Tim Sykes is our guest. He is best known for turning $12,000 into $2 million as an online stock trader. His new book, An American Hedge Fund, is coming out. Now, he grew the bulk of this growth in his investments happened while he was a student at Tulane University. Correct, Tim?
Correct. I actually went to Tufts freshman year and then Tulane the next 3 years. But I've done a little more since then, but I can't talk about it because of hedge fund regulations. You're not really allowed to talk about your performance. So I'm kind of lumped into this kid who made a lot of money back in the tech bubble, and I'd like to change that with this book.
Now, you can talk about kind of the how life was while you were doing this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be hearing this and thinking, wow, you know, I'm in college. I could maybe do the same thing. Would you say it's something others could do? Do you think you did things that just couldn't be repeated, or do you think others could follow in your footsteps?
I think there's a lot of people that can follow in the footsteps. You know, it's not for everybody. I wouldn't suggest putting your rent money, your money that you can't afford to lose in this, because it is risky. But if you work hard enough, you know, I was skipping classes. I don't recommend that, but I mean, I was into it. I put all my time. I wanted to learn as much as possible. So when the markets were closed, I was just reading websites. I was just reading books, you know. So I think it is possible to do it at home, but you also have to have realistic expectations. You know, 90% of people that do this lose money. There's a reason why. You know, it's not a great business to go into. But if you think that you have an edge and you think that you found something, then you go with it.
Tim, a lot of people have said that online day trading for a large number of people, I guess you'd call them amateur investors, is akin to gambling. Would you say that when you were doing this in college, and you just mentioned you were skipping classes, it kind of consumed you, did you ever feel like it was becoming more kind of like a gambling habit, like a compulsive gambler, or did you feel like
definitely.
It was a business?
Definitely. Sorry to cut you off, but I mean, you're just so right on about this. I mean, there's a whole gambling instinct. You know, when I started experiencing profits, I wanted that feeling more. You know, the money was nice, but I wasn't even spending any money because there was always more money to be made. So, but that feeling, it's like a nice warm feeling when you're making consistent profits and you're looking out your window and you say, wow, some people are working hard for $50,000, $100,000 a year, and here I am on my computer just gambling, but it's educated gambling, and you're making a lot more than many well-educated people are doing.
Yeah, you probably have more control over what's happening than a gambler would, who's just putting money on a, you know, on the dice or on the cards.
Correct. I cannot stress this point enough. You know, these other people, they do 50-50, black or white, black or red. You know, you lose everything or you double your money. Here, the chances of you losing everything, it's possible, but it's probably a 10 or 20% chance, and you can make a lot more than double your money. So you have higher upside and lower risk of failure. So I think I'm going to try and make this the new poker. You know, I'm also coming out with an instructional trading DVD. No one has ever really detailed penny stocks before. Everyone just says, oh, it's the Wild West. It's just pure gambling. You know, if you can create a whole system of rules and you follow those rules, I mean, that's another thing. Discipline is a huge problem for most people. You know, they put all their money in one stock. I did that. You know, I've had a wild ride. I've had a lot of ups and downs. You know, turning 12,000 to 2 million, it wasn't just straight up. So in my book, I detail everything.
Were there ever days where you walked away and said, wow, what a mess I've made. I'm done. I'm just going to take what I have and get out of this. Or did you always go back? Did you get over that pretty quickly?
I mean, there's definitely been days. I mean, I've had $180,000, $200,000 down days, and I'm like, wow, what am I doing? What have I learned over the past few years? Apparently not much, because I just lost 10% of everything I've made in one day. But then you kind of regroup, and, you know, it's about discipline. And so when I have these huge losses, you think about, okay, wait a minute, maybe I do know something. Let me try and apply some of these lessons. You know, I can't recommend keeping a diary enough. That's what you have to do. And for the first few years, I never kept a trading diary. So these same situations would pop up, and I would just forget to learn the mistakes of my past. So you keep a diary. You say, look, these are my experiences. This is what I did this time. This is what worked. This is what didn't. And you learn.
Tim Sykes is our guest. He is the author of the upcoming book, An American Hedge Fund. He has been the star. He's been the focus of the television documentary Wall Street Warriors and appears regularly CNBC and several other television programs. He has a blog. What is your website, Tim, in case people want to visit?
TimothySykes.com. Right now it's not that good of a website, but September 1st, we're going through a major revision. It's going to be all blog-centric. There's going to be a lot of new tools, and it's really just going to be helpful for young investors because I get all these emails thanks to this show, and right now there's really no information out there. So this will be the first honest guide. That's what I'm stressing.
You've mentioned discipline several times, Tim, and you're doing this in first as a senior in high school and then in college. Where did you get the discipline? Was it something your parents taught you, or is it something you just learned along the way?
No, I still don't think I have perfect discipline. You know, it's a process, and you have to really just see what works and what doesn't. The key is staying in the game. You know, even if you lose money on some play, you can't be too stubborn to take your loss because sometimes you just have to move on. You can't think that you're better than the market. The market will just humble you repeatedly. So after you get humbled enough, you know, you learn discipline. You say, okay, this is what worked, this is what didn't. So it's a learning process, and it's really not easy.
Our special guest is Timothy Sykes. We're excited to have him on the program. More with Tim when we come back. Attention, college grads, dragging around tons of student loans. Well, now there's a simple solution that can lower your monthly payment and interest rate. Student loan consolidation with one simple loan. But do it now before new laws are enacted that could actually make your student loan debt even more expensive. Get in touch with One Simple Loan today at 1-800-973-0403 or visit onesimpleloan.com/YM Radio and discover how to manage your college loan debt with just one monthly payment and one low interest rate. This service is absolutely free. There are no credit checks, no fees, and no hassles. Want to start right away? Call 1-800-973-0403 right now to transform your student loans into one simple, manageable repayment package created just for you. Feel free to call even if you just have questions. The number is 1-800-973-0403. Call now. It's just that simple.
Young Money Radio.
Timothy Sykes, our special guest on this edition of the program, and we're thrilled to talk to somebody who's actually gotten out there and turned initially $12,000 into $2 million day trading online. Tim, it's incredible when you think about it. You know, I guess not long ago, before there was online trading, had you called up a brokerage firm as a high school senior, they probably wouldn't have even taken your account, would they?
No, definitely not. I mean, I still had to open a custodial account because I was too young when I first started. But online brokerages, I mean, they've revolutionized it. They've created day trading because before the costs were too high. You know, you would pay $50 each time you wanted to trade. Now, some of my trades cost me as little as $2 a trade. So the prices have come down. The competition is wide open. And it's really a revolution.
Tim, give us, if you could, and we've got the book coming out at American Hedge Fund. You've talked a lot about this online. You have a blog as well at TimothySykes.com where people can learn more about you. But what would you look for if you were going to find somebody who could do maybe not as well as you did, but do well with online trading? What are some of the traits that you think you need to have, that you had, that you think others should have in order to do well?
It's really discipline is number one and drive is number two. You know, those are really the main two factors because discipline is first because a lot of people have drive, but they can't control their drive and they say, I just want to keep making money and they forget the lessons, you know. So, but you also need to have drive because you do need to kind of want it. You know, a lot of people want to trade. 90% of traders lose money and obviously those 90% don't want to lose money, but they're not willing to work hard enough to learn and try and better their trading. You know, this is a process. I can't repeat it enough.
Now, the new book coming out at American Hedge Fund, Tim, it's been called a novel. Is that correct?
Yes. I want to bring, this is no how-to manual. You know, I think
right. There's
too many how-to books because what worked for me might not work for somebody else, but you can learn from what worked for me and what didn't.
What was it like for you when you were making this kind of money in college? Did other people know? Did your friends know you were doing so well? Were you the, you know, kind of the big guy with all the money, or did you keep it quiet and nobody really kind of knew?
I tried to keep it quiet at first, but then I have a big mouth. It just kind of came out. You know, I would spend some money. I was in college. I had no idea what was going on. There was no guide. That's another thing. You know, I want my book to kind of be a guide for young people who make a lot of money because I made a lot of mistakes, and no one really admits to these. So, I mean, I was kind of spread my money around, and a lot of people knew about it. You know, I was trading on behalf of friends and family members just because they wanted to see what I was doing too. So I would sometimes have an audience of a few people watching me trade.
Were there any big splurges? Did you go out and buy a $50,000 Hummer or anything like that?
Well, I mean, when I made most of my money, it was there was really just another play every single day. So there's really no time to go out and spend a lot of money. And if you did spend a lot of money on these splurges, you know, it would take away from your trading accounts. It's a different kind of system because you need the money to make more money. So
yeah.
I didn't have any big splurges. You know, I would just have, like, fancy dinners, expensive bar tabs, and I started a scholarship at Tulane for $15,000. That was my biggest splurge.
I think that's incredible that you started that, the Timothy Sykes Day Trading Award for the Talented?
Correct.
And that's
neat. It's not just for day traders. You know, I want to kind of elevate the mindset that everyone has about day trading, but it's really for any kind of talented person. The lady that won it last year, it's open to all of Tulane students, faculty, alumni. You know, I don't like to restrict it. Openness is my thing. So this girl, she builds boats from scratch, big wooden boats, and it was just incredible, her passion for it.
Now, since you've gotten this publicity, Tim, and word is out on this from the Wall Street kind of the industry standpoint, are you sought after? Are you more seen as this guy was just a fluke, or do they take you seriously on Wall Street? And have you been approached? If you can talk about that, is there a future for you there? You're just going to do your own thing. What kind of things are coming up for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of half and half. You know, again, with the industry regulations, started my hedge fund in 2003, and once I did that, I can't talk about it. So I'm tired of that. The book is just going to release everything. I mean, this is America. We should be free to detail our businesses. It's going to be interesting. You know, I've definitely been approached by a few different groups, you know, brokerages and such, and I just had my first speaking engagement a few weeks ago. You know, I really just want my story to inspire but also educate. You know, I don't want to be one of those snake oil salesmen. I have big dreams, and I kind of want to bring honesty back to Wall Street, and it's been a while since that's happened.
Well, it's an inspiring story, and I'm assuming you continue to trade on a daily basis, Tim.
Oh, correct? Yeah. I mean, my hedge fund, we ranked the number one short bias fund 2003 to 2006. So it's still been going. But again, it's very realistic. You know, it's not easy to go from 12,000 to 2 million to 20 million. You have to have kind of realistic expectations. And when you turn 12,000 into 2 million, you don't really know. So my book is also about scalability because it's not as easy to grow 1,000 times when you have millions of dollars under management.
Tim Sykes' book, An American Hedge Fund, will be coming out in October. You can expect to see much more of him on television and, of course, on the web. Tim, give us your website one more time.
TimothySykes.com.
It's been great to talk with you. Continued good luck. Best of luck with the book and each of your endeavors. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I would love it. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks, Tim. You're listening to Young Money Radio. I'm Mike Sciano. Hey, if you have ideas for future segments of the show, a financial question, or if you'd like to submit some audio, like an interesting interview for possible use here on Young Money Radio, send your email to radio@youngmoney.com. That's radio@youngmoney.com.
What is Young Money Magazine? Young Money is the only money and lifestyle magazine written by young adults for young adults. Young Money features bold celebrity interviews, guaranteed ways to make fast cash, real-life strategies for finding your dream job, insider tips for starting your own business, and updates on the latest tech gadgets. Young Money Magazine is your life right now. Find out more at youngmoney.com.
Attention, college grads, dragging around tons of student loans. Well, now there's a simple solution that can lower your monthly payment and interest rate. Student loan consolidation with one simple loan. But do it now before new laws are enacted that could actually make your student loan debt even more expensive. Get in touch with One Simple Loan today at 1-800-973-0403 or visit onesimpleloan.com/YN. YMRadio and discover how to manage your college loan debt with just one monthly payment and one low interest rate. This service is absolutely free. There are no credit checks, no fees, and no hassles. Want to start right away? Call 1-800-973-0403 right now to transform your student loans into one simple, manageable repayment package created just for you. Feel free to call even if you just have questions. The number's 1-800-973-0403. Call now. It's just that simple.
Young Money Radio.
Have you seen your credit reports and credit scores lately? Federal law now gives all of us the ability to see all three of our reports for free once a year. But is it really something students should care about now, or can it wait? We talked to Mark Price, an expert on credit from BrightScore.com, for some answers. Mark, it's so good to have you back on the show.
Mike, it's good to be back as always.
You know, for a while, I thought you were just going to, you know, basically live on the road. You've been traveling coast to coast, bringing the message of credit and BrightScore to people across the country.
It seems to be that way. It seems like summer's the time when people need to hear about credit. I used to think it was only at Christmas time, but apparently it is a year-long situation.
Well, that's a good point. Do you think, I mean, we've heard a lot over the past 2 years since the FACT Act and people began to get access to their credit reports more easily, more focused, more, I guess, news reports on it. Do you find that people are more in tune with the importance of credit reports and scores, or is it basically the same as it's always been?
I think for the most part, as far as spending habits are concerned, I think still the Christmas time, the holiday season time is when people tend to look at it, to try to understand how much they can afford or how far they can stretch the boundaries of their credit worthiness. And then they tend to worry about it toward the beginning of the year. And then it's usually spring and summer before they get it all figured out. And then the cycle kind of starts over again. So yeah. I don't think that part has changed.
January, you make that New Year's resolution. I'm going to get out of debt and I'm going to start to focus on money. And it's just like losing weight. That lasts for about a week. And then the real world takes over.
Good analogy.
Well, it's so important. And you mentioned that people are thinking in terms of using credit for buying things, the holiday spending, and then the hangover. They call it the holiday hangover with credit and debt after you've gone shopping too much. But, you know, really, when we talk about credit, we're thinking more in broader terms. It's not just credit cards, although that's probably the most, I guess the thing that people see the most. You know, they get the credit card bill every month. They have the debt hanging over them. But really, from your point of view, credit is much bigger than just your use of credit cards, right?
Well, absolutely. A lot of people just recently have begun to learn the different ways in which credit is now used in everyday life. Some of the seminars and the presentations that we do around the country on behalf of BrightScore, we bring to light some of the things such as the job interview process. A lot of people do not realize that around 70% of employers are now using either a credit score or a credit report as some form of I don't know how to really put it, as a way to determine maybe.
That's a screening process.
It really is. It's a screening. And you start looking at government clearance situations. A lot of times if people are not aware of what may be on their credit report, that could prohibit them from getting that clearance or even a job. Now, most people know that, you know, applying for a home loan or a refinance or maybe even a car, those things, obviously, credit, it does play a big role. But now, you know, a rental situation, whether it be an apartment or renting equipment, things like insurance premiums, for example, a lot of people do not realize that your credit score can have a direct impact on the amount of money that you pay per month, even for your car insurance. So we're trying to bring the light now to folks that it's not just a score, it's not a report. It needs to be a way of life for most folks. And as I've heard you say many times, it can be a part of your financial resume.
It really is. I mean, so many people, as you mentioned, are looking at your credit report and credit score and making decisions about you. Our guest is Mark Price from BrightScore. BrightScore.com is the website. So many people are making decisions, Mark, as you mentioned, employers, which is a huge one. And a lot of people look at me in disbelief when I mention that at workshops and things. And they say, employers, why do they care about my credit report? And then they go, oh, well, but I don't work in accounting, so it doesn't matter. But it really does, right? It's more than just accountants getting their credit scores checked.
Well, of course. And, you know, even with that, a lot of companies check your driving record and if you've been arrested and some of the other things. What they want to do is, you know, so many people are applying for so few jobs. And what they want to do now is if there comes a time where there needs to be a tiebreaker, They want to look at those types of things. You know, how does this person who's applying for this job keep their own house in order, so to speak? Because that may be a direct reflection upon how they handle their responsibilities in their own department at the job that they're applying for.
So, great point. Yeah, if you're looking to move up in a company, certainly your employer would want to know how you'd if you manage your own personal affairs properly.
Correct.
That's a good reflection on how you might do for the company. But yeah, utility companies, landlords, people say, well, I don't want to own a house. I'm just trying to rent. Well, they're going to pull a credit report on you.
Absolutely.
When you go to rent, there are even databases now that check your rental history so that they can see if you've made your rent payments on time.
Absolutely. And, absolutely. Well, one of the things that people do not realize or maybe have not come to the conclusion that they need to admit this is the fact that this is not going to go away. If anything, the boundaries are going to be expanded, broadened even further than they are now. So this situation of having good credit, having a good score, maintaining a solid credit worthiness, this is something that's going to have to be a part of your everyday life, something that you have to attend to on a daily basis. And right. It is your responsibility, by the way.
Yeah, a lot of people, Mark, think about, I know a lot of people over the years have recently signed up for those monitoring services and they think their job is done.
Right.
But that's only to tell you things that are going on. Really, what you need to be worried about is what is included in your report.
Correct.
Currently, and your score, and how that is affected, your score, how it's affected by what's in your report. Where do people start? Where do you suggest people start? Because it could be a little intimidating for somebody who's never even seen their credit report.
It can be overwhelming. That's why we're very happy with the product that we have put out. I would always suggest that people take advantage of the free credit report that is available to them. And, you're welcome to give that website out. I think it's annualcreditreport.com.
Right.
And people can go there and get all three credit reporting agencies' version of their credit report, hence a tri-merged. They can get them all together. They can get them at different times of the year. I would suggest about every 4 months going to each of the different repositories and getting that credit report. So you can kind of get an annual look at it, but also, too, you don't go too long without seeing what exactly is on there.
And you've got three reports.
You do have three reports.
They're all different because people think, they're all three the same. I can just get one and they're all going to be the same. But no, that's not true.
It's not true. And sometimes things will appear on one that do not appear on others. And it just depends upon the creditor or the organization that is reporting to that to that reporting agency. So if you've been in the hospital or you have doctor bills or you may have had a divorce, a bankruptcy, all of those things, you may really want to pay close attention to that.
Yeah. It's important to do that. You get the reports. Now, just because you get your reports doesn't mean you're going to understand anything that they say.
Well,
right?
That's a perfect segue. In all actuality, about 95% of the American population have no idea how to read this report. And one of the reasons is because the credit report was actually created as an internal document for banking representatives, for lenders, for people who actually give the money. So it's very difficult for the consumer on the other side of the table, if you will, to understand that.
Okay, our special guest on today's show is Mark Price from BrightScore. The website is brightscore.com. We'll give you some information on what you can find there. And we're talking about your credit reports. Always put the S on there. There's more than one. And your credit scores, which you can have multiple scores. And people, normally, Mark, I think people hear their credit score when they're trying to get a car loan. You know, it's maybe the first time or when they're applying for a mortgage. They hear their your credit score is X. The last person you want to hear your credit score from is the person you're trying to get a loan from. I think that, in my opinion, maybe you agree or not, it's too late at that point. You should know your score and have your credit reports under wraps way before you go apply for a loan.
Well, of course. I mean, think about this. I mean, it's to your advantage to know what your situation is prior to going in there. That's just another form of negotiating.
Yeah.
Especially depending upon the type of auto dealership or lender that you may be dealing with, there may be some flexibility in the rate that you pay based upon the score that you have.
Mark Price, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike. It was great to be on with you.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Young Money Radio. Be sure to tell your friends. And if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, send your email to radio@youngmoney.com. radio@youngmoney.com. This program is available for listening 24/7 at youngmoney.com. Young Money Magazine is a publication of the In Charge Education Foundation, a national nonprofit financial education organization. I'm Mike Sciano, and for everyone here at Young Money, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.